free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Tuesday, March 25th, 2014. Talking to Amanda Billyrock today. Before I bring on Amanda, I want to update you guys on what I've been doing. What's left of me, anyway, is going to update you on what I've been doing. What's been going on over the past week or so? Of course, you know, in my personal life, we had a baby, and then the baby had to be in neonatal intensive care for about 11 days, and so we just were able to bring her home yesterday. But in the meantime, here and there, when I was able to grab some time, I did an enormous amount of work on my Western Civilization 1 course over at ronpaulhomeschool.com. In order to be able to launch this thing as quickly as possible, we launched it without the courses being done. We were like 8 weeks ahead of the students, so there was no chance they were going to catch up to us, and then that way, you know, we'd finish before the end of the year, and then they'd finish at the end of the year, and it would all work out. So I'm just about done with my Western Civ 1 course, just about done with my government course. These courses are 180 videos per course for a full year course. 36 weeks, 5 videos a week. So what did I do last week? Let's see. I talked about just war theory. I talked about, I spent two lessons on Thomas Aquinas and showing people scholastic philosophy, how it worked, how it proceeded, how St. Thomas engaged in it, the types of questions that he tried to answer. Then I talked about the later scholastics, particularly Duns Scotus and William of Ockham. Spent a lesson on the cathedrals, another one on the rise of towns and cities in medieval Europe. Then the economy in the High Middle Ages. Then a lesson on the medieval contribution to Western prosperity. Then two lessons on the Holy Roman Empire in the 12th century and a little bit thereafter. A lesson on medieval literature. I am today finishing up my lesson on Dante and the Divine Comedy. I did my lesson on King Philip IV versus Pope Boniface VIII. I did a lesson on Marsilius of Padua and the attack on papal power, his work Defensor Pacis. I prefer the ecclesiastical pronunciation. Sounds more like Italian, which I love. I did the lesson on the Avignon Papacy, the period in the 14th century where the popes were in Avignon instead of in Rome. A lesson on the 14th century crisis, the Black Death, the Hundred Years' War, famine, etc. I did a lesson on England in the 14th century, another one on France in the 14th century, another one on the Hundred Years' War, and another one on the Great Western Schism. So I did that in about a week. Now, how did I do that? Well, I don't know, by killing myself? What else can I say? But I think this is good material. Like, this is great stuff. Like, wouldn't you like to know about this stuff? And that's just one sample of what I'm doing. You can get the whole list of lessons that will be included in this course by going to TomWoods.com, not Tom Woods Radio, TomWoods.com/Western Civ. You can also check out my government course at TomWoods.com/government. As of now, you can get these courses. People are taking them right now. I have students right now taking them. You can get them through the Ron Paul Homeschool program at RonPaulHomeschool.com, and pretty soon you'll be able to get them a la carte directly through me. Although my contractual deal with the Ron Paul curriculum is that if you don't get them through them and you just get them through me, they cost a little bit more. But that's because you don't have to pay the Ron Paul homeschool fee. So it sort of comes out in the wash. But if you like that stuff, or even if you don't, I just wanted to tell somebody what I've been doing, because I may not be around much longer to be able to inform people after all the energy that this thing is taking. So in the meantime, you can warm my overworked heart by supporting this program at no cost to yourself, by thinking to yourself every time you're about to buy something on Amazon, isn't there some hardworking guy who's earning like 3 cents an hour? And by the way, I'm not joking. I'm probably earning about 3 cents an hour making these homeschool courses. So if you want to help support that, that sounds like something worthy to you. And he also liked this program. Every time you're about to buy something at Amazon, think, oh, isn't there some overworked guy who, gosh, he means so well and he's trying so darn hard. And boy, it must be expensive to raise five kids. And now he's got to have a special podcast office and everything. Enter Amazon through the special widget at TomWoodsRadio.com and you will really be helping me out. All right, let's welcome Amanda Billyrock right now. She is an anarchist vlogger. She also recently joined the Free State Project in New Hampshire, so we'll get an update on that. And in general, she's been very successful on social media. So a lot to talk about with her. You can check her out and get links to where she's active at AmandaBillyrock.com. Amanda, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's start off with the most pressing issue of all, which is what's the deal with your last name?
Good point. When I started on YouTube, like, super long time ago, I just wanted to create an account to leave a comment on a video. And so I just chose a random name. And then fast forward a few years later, when I released my own first video, I never remembered to change it. And so after a few videos came out, I figured it would be silly to change a name that a few people had become accustomed to, so I left it.
Nice. Nice. Okay. I've always wanted to ask, but I thought, you know, there's no way that's a real name, but I'm afraid to find out what the deal is. But all right, that's good. You could be like half the people in New Hampshire and call yourself Amanda Freeman, but it's too late. Now you've got Billy Rock and that's what it is. All right. Well,
guess so.
Since I did mention New Hampshire, I guess since you told me I could bring up the Free State Project, I guess it's okay to tell people that you do live in New Hampshire. So anybody trying to stalk you has narrowed it down to one state in the union. But when you associate yourself with a Free State Project, you got to take the good with the bad. But tell me how that's been going. How long ago did you move to New Hampshire?
It's been almost 7 months now, and it's truly the time of my life. This is the best decision I could have made as an adult, where I am right now doing what I want to do.
Wow, that's great. And you find that generally speaking, the Free State community has been very welcoming. They helped you as you were arriving or whatever. I mean, you had friends there to start with, I assume?
I had just a few acquaintances that I had met at Porkfest, but no actual friends yet. And they've been, like, welcoming is an understatement. I mean, I feel like, to use the words of Stefan Molyneux, I feel like I found my tribe. And so, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm, like, hanging out with people, with groups of friends, you know, and I have things to do on the weekends and whatnot. Like, this is the opposite of me in high school. Like, in high school, I stayed home on the weekends. We were moving around all the time, so I was lucky if I had, like, a friend.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I'm kind of, like, a decade late on this whole being social thing. And so I'm just glad that it happened for me eventually.
That's so funny. That's the opposite of what I would have thought.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, now, in New Hampshire, before we get any further in this, I want to know if you can just tell people what the Free State Project is. I would assume 90% of the people who listen to this program know what the Free State Project is, but I have newbies all the time, and I don't want to talk some different language from them. So just give us, like, the three-sentence overview of what you're trying to do in the Free State Project.
Sure. Well, it was based on an academic paper that was written in 2001 by a doctorate student whose thesis was how liberty can be achieved in our lifetime. And he theorized that if enough like-minded people could congregate in one geographical area, that they could influence local politics and culture enough that an almost sort of secession, however you want to think about that, could take place. And so far, over 1,500 of us have made the move early. And once 20,000 signers are reached, everyone will move within 5 years. And right now, we're at almost 16,000 signers.
Well, you already have told me something I didn't know. I didn't know that this doctoral thesis was the origin of the Free State Project. So that's great. I'm glad I asked you the question. That's good. I've gotten a lot of requests from people, you know, wanting to know, why don't I move to New Hampshire? And the problem is we just have a lot of roots right now in terms of my kids and family in Kansas, and unfortunately, and I don't ultimately have roots in Kansas. My roots are in Massachusetts, and New Hampshire would be no problem for me culturally or any other way. But unfortunately, we're kind of stuck here. And the idea that in New Hampshire you get to hang around with big groups of friends is so alien to me, because in Kansas I'm living basically in Huckabee country. You know, this is not Ron Paul Central. This is not a state where if I have an event, I get a big crowd. Like, if I go to Utah, I've already got a big crowd lined up for an event I'm doing in May. You know, but in Kansas, I could give them 5 years notice. It wouldn't make any difference. So I'm deeply envious of what you've done. Now, I first got to know about you from your YouTube channel, and then we met when you came to the Mises Institute. So I wonder if you can talk about starting a YouTube channel and what made you decide to do that, and how did you do it? Because you've been very effective. I mean, you've built up something of a fan base. People know who you are just because you got a camera and you're effective in front of the camera and you talk about things that matter to people. How did that get started? I mean, how does somebody think to himself, you know, I think I'll start up a YouTube channel? It seems like rather an undertaking.
You know, it is, and it's not an undertaking that I undertook. It was an accident, almost. I was just getting super into the Ron Paul campaign, and the Iowa primaries were coming up. It was December of 2011, and there was a contest being hosted to give a stump speech for Ron Paul in the Iowa primaries.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, and so they wanted people to post sample speeches of themselves so that they could judge and choose a winner. And so my YouTube channel was started just because I was entering a contest.
And now how many videos do you have, roughly?
About 75 now.
Wow, wow, wow. Okay, and they're how many minutes each, roughly?
I try to stay between 2 and 3.
Wow, that is perfect. I wish I could follow your advice. I say to myself, I'm going to keep this video short, and it winds up 15 minutes. Nobody watches a 15-minute video, but 2 to 3 minutes is absolutely excellent. Have you been continuing to update it, or are you busy with other things now?
I probably post a new video like once a month now, and it's always something new, like what's going on here in the Free State. Like recently, we went out at night, and we found ourselves in a situation where there was some inappropriateness going on in the street with police just kind of camping out in an area where they really weren't welcome, and my friends approached this police vehicle and started asking the officer for his identification and telling him that they could smell alcohol on his breath and saying, well, if you don't have anything to hide, why won't you let us search your trunk? And Tom, I tell you what, these cops, they got a bit puffed up for a bit, but then they left. And it's my most highly viewed video I've ever posted.
Wow.
So, yeah, when interesting things happen in here, that's what gets posted these days.
Well, tell us a little bit about the circumstances behind your arrest not long ago. Were you in New Hampshire already when that happened?
That was in New Hampshire, yes. That was in December. And I was arrested for what they call contempt of cop. Basically, if someone's shouting orders at you and it's very important to his ego that you obey and he's a member of the monopoly on violence, he's just going to put you in a cage for a night because he can. And so that's what happened.
But maybe you were asking for it. That's what the typical law and order person would say. You must have been up to no good, right? Cops don't just arbitrarily go up to people and put them in cages, or do they?
You know, it's crazy. The headlines the next day said, Billy Rock arrested for DUI, blah, 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 because that's what the police department, they can say whatever they want. But then once the headlines died down about a month later, then I have to tell people, by the way, I wasn't driving under the influence and they know it, which is why they just dropped that charge.
So what did you do that was contemptuous of them? Were you screaming at them? Were you calling them names? Were you physically harming them? Like, what was it that amounted to contempt of cop? I'd love to know.
So it was actually the opposite of that. I actually refused to speak at all at a traffic stop. I was pulled over. I don't know why. I was never told why. And I provided my papers, just like I was asked, updated legal valid papers. But I didn't answer questions. And within 30 seconds of it being clear that I wasn't going to answer questions, Michael Armstrong, an officer in Laconia, New Hampshire, threatened to break in my car window.
Wow.
Yeah.
So at that point, did they pull you out of the car? Like, what happened next?
My passenger chose to get out of the car because she believed that she could reason with them by stepping out of the car. And she left the car door open, which gave them opportunity to reach in and unlock my driver's side door from the inside unbuckle me and physically pull me out.
Wow.
And so it's these two men who are twice my size, right, pulling me out of a car. And you're still not speaking?
You're still not speaking at this point? Okay.
No, not speaking. One of the charges they tried to throw at me later was resisting arrest. As though I'm going to try to muscle my way out of a situation with two men who are twice my size. It's just, this whole situation was so revelatory to me of how these thugs operate. Road pirates is one of my favorite terms, actually.
But did anybody say to you in the wake of this, look, Amanda, you got to pick your battles. You know, we know the cops are jerks, and we have, like, the whole world against us. We have every battle under the sun to go fight, and... You know, wouldn't it be better for the sake of convenience and your own comfort to just answer their questions and drive on?
I've had some of that, yes. And, you know, maybe that's something, maybe in the future I would speak. I think it's a situational thing. But that night, Tom, I had been hanging out with Adamo Freeman and Silver Dave. And they kind of have this running joke going that they call Slave World. Which is basically that, you know, we live as slaves in a slave world when it comes down to it. And so after having spent a righteous evening with them talking about slave world, okay. Having that
yeah, you were
me
ready
on the
to
way
go.
Home, I was not about to be a slave.
Okay.
Not that night.
Nice. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, I would think I do know Adamo Freeman, and I can imagine how that conversation would have gone. So, okay, great. Now, before we go on, though, I guess I want to talk about this when we were talking about your YouTube channel, but I have so many ideas in my head, and I'm still barely it's incredible I'm able to function at all, given the week we've had. We had a baby last week, and then my wife had a C-section, and she's still recovering, and then they won't let the baby out of the neonatal intensive care, even though there's nothing wrong with her, and we got to keep going to the hospital. It's just totally crazy. So if I ask questions out of order, it's a miracle I'm asking them at all. But I did want to ask, somebody told me that you were able to, you used your YouTube channel in order to get a response from a company. Like, what's that all about?
I did. I signed up for a VPN service a couple of months ago, a virtual private network. It basically gives you an IP address that's different from your actual IP address, so it lends some privacy to your web surfing. And this, I specifically chose this company because they took Bitcoin, because I'm unbanked, and so any online purchases I do these days are all with Bitcoin. And so I paid for the service, and out of nowhere, this company sends me an email like asking for my identity, saying that it's to prevent payment fraud. And I responded to them, you clearly don't understand Bitcoin. There's no such thing as a fraudulent payment. You have the coins. There's no way that transaction can be reversed. And they refused to refund me my money. And so I made a video about it to, you know, help protect other Bitcoiners who would also be attracted to them for their VPN service. And within a couple of days, the video had 5,000-6,000 hits. And the company, you know, surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, emailed me and said, oh, just kidding, we'll totally give you a refund. Sorry about that.
Wow, that is great. That is great. Now, I've never used my YouTube channel for something quite like that, but I just used my blog once when there was a rental car company. I won't mention their name because they did actually make good on it. But when we got to Tampa for the Paul Festival in 2012, I had reserved a car. And we got there, there was no rental car. They didn't have, well, we're all out of cars. And I thought, I don't know if you ever saw the Seinfeld episode where he's rented a car, he goes up to make good on his reservation, and they say, sorry, we're out of cars. And he says, well, you know, I had a reservation. Yeah, sorry, but we're out of cars. He says, do you know what a reservation is? And she says, I do. And he says, you know, I don't think you do. Like, the reservation is supposed to keep the car here. So there we are in the middle of Tampa. It's late at night. We have no car. It's the Republican convention, so all the cars are – it was just awful. And so I posted this on my blog, and I really pushed it around. And sure enough, they refunded me they refunded the difference between what I would have had to pay them for a car and the hugely inflated car price I wound up having to pay from another place. They sent me a check. So it really is the great equalizer. There was a video. Remember that guy who there was some airline that broke his guitar? So he made a video and had like a million views. And like they're begging him to take a check from them, but he doesn't even want it anymore after the way they treated him. All right. Let's talk, though, about cryptocurrency. Let's talk about Bitcoin, because I've been interested in that, and apparently you're interested in that as well. My key question would be, in the wake of this fiasco at Mt. Gox, is Bitcoin going to have an appeal beyond just people who have an ideological investment in the working of a non-government money? Because a lot of people like the idea that my dollars are safe in a bank that's insured by the FDIC. And no, I don't want to be in a situation where I get told, okay, your money's really not safe and it's actually been gradually stolen over the course of a few years, but hey, the government wasn't involved, so you can comfort yourself in that way. A lot of people wouldn't take comfort from that. So is this not the beginning of the end for Bitcoin?
Well, I can't see how anyone wouldn't see the death of Mt. Gox as a huge plus. Because if Bitcoin were centrally run and issued, Mt. Gox could have been bailed out at the expense of all of us. And so I think it's just so reassuring to see that Bitcoin is a money market in which the bad players actually do fail, so that the capital that they were using poorly can be reallocated to more effective uses. So I would think that the death of Mt. Gox would make Bitcoin even more attractive than the dollar.
Do you think it also teaches a lesson about storing your Bitcoins, keeping them in your own wallet instead of at an exchange?
Yes, I've never used an exchange. I've always taken care of my own storage. And if I were to use, I understand the plight of the trader, right? Because if you're wanting to make large trades, you need to leave large amounts on exchanges. And so I can't speak to that, but I am told by traders that the signs that Mt. Gox was not doing what they were supposed to be doing were evident many, many months, if not over a year before their death. And so from what I'm told, this was seen coming.
Indeed, by many people, but unfortunately many others suffered tremendously. And the thing is that every time I have Eric Voorhees on this program, whom I met in New Hampshire, as a matter of fact, he is always careful to tell people, don't put money into Bitcoin that, you know, you need to live on. If you, in other words, money that you can't afford to lose. This is still experimental, and to put your entire life savings in it might, you know, could be a mistake, particularly if you're going to put it, certainly with Mt. Gox, that would have been a horrifyingly bad mistake. Now, when you say unbanked, I feel like such a square. I assume that means that you're not involved in the traditional banking system. I'm sorry for being so out of it.
You're not a square. You got it right on the head there, Tom.
Is this a term that's now in general use, and I'm so out of the loop that I don't know about it?
No, and you know why? It's only used by squares, I think. I think it's a term that, you know, like establishment people like to throw around, and they use it in a negative connotation. Saying, you know, that the millions of unbanked Americans, you know, need to get themselves down to the Bank of America today. And I use it in a positive sense.
Sure.
I'm happy to be unbanked. No more late fees. No more fears that my debit card will be stolen. No more fears that in a Cyprus-like situation, the government will just, hey, seize the contents of my bank account. None of that.
I can't help asking, Amanda, if you don't mind. I'm sorry, you probably get this question a lot. But I do, before I let you go, want to ask about your thoughts on the general question of women in libertarianism, just because it does come up. And I've had Julie Borowski on this program, who got into some trouble for her video on that. And she makes videos partly that are very informative, and sometimes she just wants to get people's attention and be funny and whatever. And a lot of times, not everybody has a sense of humor. But what is your take on this? Sometimes we get told that the reason there aren't more women is that the men are just creeps, or they're not welcoming, or they're belligerently sexist or whatever, and they don't make it welcoming for women. Is that your experience?
Not at all, really. And I think that – I don't think that liberty is a community before it's an idea. I think that anyone, women included, will or will not be attracted to an idea based on the merits of that idea. I don't think that who hangs out at the local libertarian meetup so much has an influence as to how someone feels about an entire ideology. And so if, you know, if the question is, why aren't there more women who have embraced this ideology? Through my surfings on Facebook, I have to tell you that there actually are a lot, but they're just not very vocal. A lot of women just aren't the kind who are going to go out and, you know, go to a protest or write a blog or make a video or really be very vocal at all. But when you start talking to a lot of these women, like, hey, you know, do you think there needs to be police on every corner? No. Do you think there needs to be a federal income tax? Not particularly. So on and so forth. And so I think that, you know, as the movement continues to grow, more women may find that they want to become more vocal. And if not, I don't see that as a problem.
Well, I don't like the idea in general that we should obsess over percentages of different demographic groups represented in the movement, as we might say. I think it's just a matter of teaching what we believe and just continuing on it, and whoever wants to join is free to join. I mean, there's no other institution in American life, or very few, that obsess over this. If I look at baseball games, if I look at opera houses, if I look at museums, I'm going to find all different groups there, men, women, racial groups, generational groups. And, you know, it is what it is. Like, my audience tends to be younger. But that's not because I'm actively discriminating against older people. Anybody can listen to my program. I want everybody. I want the whole world to listen to the program. But I'm just going to be me and let the chips fall where they may. And I think that's where libertarians have to be. Be who you are, say what you believe, and let the chips fall where they may.
I like that.
All right. Is there anything else we want to close with? What else do you want to tell the world before we say goodbye today?
Happy second day of spring.
That's nice. All right. Well, listen, Amanda, I really appreciate your time today, and I know that you and I have crazy schedules, and somehow we were able to make this work. I appreciate that. I hope to see you in your now natural habitat of New Hampshire one of these days soon.
You will.
All right, great. Thanks again. All right, everybody, that was Amanda Billyrock, amandabillyrock.com. I decided who's going to be on the Friday show, and that's Ben Powell. Remember, we had Ben to talk about Somalia. Hey, why don't you libertarians go move to Somalia? Well, Ben has a brand new book out from Cambridge University Press on sweatshops and what's wrong with Kathy Lee's crusade against sweatshops, et cetera, et cetera. But to have that published by Cambridge is unbelievable. So we're going to talk to Ben Powell about that on that day. Another way to warm my heart, by the way, is to join LibertyClassroom.com. Make yourself into a formidable debater by joining LibertyClassroom.com, getting those courses, getting access to those Q&A forums, and saving some dough with coupon code SHOW in all caps. All right, that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.